Sunshine here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. 2 hours down, 2 hours to go here as Mego wraps up her radio marathon for the week. Right before the break, or actually earlier last hour, Mego had teased an article about a possible move for the New England Patriots that may upset me. And I have been worried about this now for about an hour. So please, Mego, will you free me from my anxiety and tell me what the heck you're talking about?
I honestly don't know how I missed this earlier in the week. Because like you said before, I've been on this radio station every day for I think like the last 10 days at this point. But Greg Bedard of the Boston Sports Journal, he sparked a trade rumor heading into the 2025 NFL season.
Oh, boy.
With this little note here.
Okay.
He writes, earlier this week, Stephon Diggs, Mac Hollins, and Kyle Williams are the stone cold locks for the wide receiver room. That sounds good, right?
Okay.
That's good.
Yeah.
Stephon Diggs, Mac Hollins, Kyle Williams, stone cold locks.
We got that tracks.
We got 12 receivers in contention for, I don't know, six spots maybe.
Yep.
Maybe on the roster.
That's a clear, that is a true statement. I would agree with that.
He continues here. I am, however, not guaranteeing that Diggs is on this roster.
What?
He just said it was a lock. He just said he was a lock.
Hypocrite.
Diggs is not on the roster.
What do you mean?
He says the team isn't thrilled with Diggs. If, for whatever reason, a legit number one becomes available, I can't rule out Diggs going in a huge trade.
Okay, but... okay. What number one would become available?
Well, there's a number one who is unhappy with his contract down in Washington.
Oh, that one. Interesting.
Would that categorize a number one here, and would you call that a huge trade for Steph Diggs? If you do Steph Diggs and a third for Terry McLaurin straight up.
Oh, I would do that. Yeah.
Okay, how about Steph Diggs and a second?
Yes, for Terry McLaurin, yeah.
Okay, do you feel like that's a realistic trade that could be moved?
No, I don't think Washington would want Stephon Diggs.
Stephon Diggs is a Washington native.
True.
He's from
Maryland
the Washington
guy,
area.
University of Maryland guy. I get that, but...
from Gaithersburg, Maryland.
So my thought, though, is that if they wanted him, they could have just signed him in free agency. Like, that's the whole thing, right? Is, like, Stephon Diggs was a free agent. He was available to sign with anybody he wanted to. If the Commanders really wanted him, they didn't have to trade for Deebo Samuel, and they could have just signed Stephon Diggs. Or they could have done both. Hell, they could do both of them. It doesn't matter to them. So, and I don't believe, at least from what I remember, from what I recall, and from what I've read, like, I don't think at any point the Commanders had any interest in him. And so, if that's the case, then, like, I don't know. I don't know that they would do it. But maybe Terry McLaurin being disgruntled and wanting out of Washington changes that, I guess. But I just, look, I don't see it as very likely.
Is it possible,
to be fair,
we get to a point where it's training camp. Terry McLaurin still doesn't have a new contract with the Commanders.
Okay.
Both sides are getting aggravated.
Yep.
They're like, this is going to become dysfunctional in training camp. We can't have this drag out, and mm-hmm. we're not getting any closer. They look at New England and Stephon Diggs, and Stephon Diggs has passed his physical and is a full participant in training camp and looks Stephon Diggsy. And they say, maybe this is a change of scenery for both guys. That's all this is. And we swap two 30-year-olds. What is Diggs, like 32?
I think so. I'll double check.
So
that
around the same age, swap these two. Plus, we don't really think the Patriots are actually going to be good this year because we're not locally in New England where everyone seems to think they're automatically going to be at least a 10-win team.
Yep.
And we're going to be good. So we also get a very high pick along with Stephon Diggs. We get someone to help our roster down here in Washington with a Washington area native. And we get a second rounder that's going to be very high, practically a low first rounder for the Patriots because we think that they're going to be like a 4-win team, which we both said was possible last year.
Yep.
I mean, yesterday, rather. It feels like last year.
Yesterday.
And so we're giving you Terry McLaurin for Stephon Diggs and a second.
Maybe they do that. Maybe. I don't know, because I look at it from this perspective, right? If I'm Washington, doesn't that make me worse? Like a lot worse?
Well, it depends how, I mean, look, this is putting you in a place now where you have to fess up what you think Stephon Diggs expectations are going to be.
Yeah, I mean, in eight games last year, he had just shy of 500 yards, three touchdowns in that Houston offense.
So he was on pace for exactly a 1,000-yard season.
Yeah, just over it. 17-game season, he'd get over the 1,000 yards.
Yeah, if you assume that he was going to continue at that pace before the injury in an offense that would probably be pretty similar, at least in capability, to the Commanders without Terry McLaurin,
yep.
Then Diggs goes down there with Debo Samuel, and he becomes a 1,000-yard receiver again.
Yeah, I mean, look, if I'm the Patriots, I do that trade in a heartbeat. Like, if that trade is on the table, I do it immediately. I don't have to give up a first-round pick for a guy who's had five straight 1,000-yard seasons. Yeah, I'll do that. Like, especially a guy not coming off a torn ACL. I understand I'd have to give Terry McLaurin a contract as well. That's fine with me. You have plenty of money to do so. Like, I would, if I'm the New England Patriots, I'd do that in a second. Whereas, if I'm the Commanders, I hesitate a little bit. And I think that's kind of my hang-up here is, it's the only spot that I can see a number one, legitimate number one wide receiver shaking loose. And I just don't know if Washington's perspective, from their perspective, is if it's worth the headache to bring in Stephon Diggs, because especially with what's gone on in the offseason.
So that's why I bring it up, because when you see Greg Bedard writing, the team is not necessarily happy with Stephon Diggs, and there's a possibility they could move on from him before he ever takes a single snap with the Patriots. Who else would become available? Who else, unless they're trading away their number one receiver, even when he's coming off an ACL, for picks for next year, for somewhere else on the team? Nowhere else on the team is there a need as much as wide receiver. You have 100 wide receivers, and they all look like 400-yard guys right now.
Yeah.
Other than Steph Diggs.
I a lot of the times when I will take a lot of things Bedard says with a grain of salt. I tend to kind of be a little hesitant towards reports that he has a lot of the times. And to me, this is just a clear, I feel like if it is in fact somebody from the Patriots organization that's giving him this, like, it's clearly just almost like a veiled threat that, hey, Steph, make sure you're in line. Otherwise, we're not going to hesitate to trade.
Is it a veiled threat or is it a shop?
No, I don't think they're shopping. I think this is a clear indicator. Like, they're trying to draw a line. Whereas, hey, Steph, if you're not in line throughout training camp, preseason, and into the regular season, we won't hesitate to deal you if there is an opportunity. And I think that's all this is. Like, I don't think that there is. I don't think they are out calling teams about Stephon Diggs. I don't think they are. Like, that's, I don't think you just sign a guy and then before he even takes a snap for your team, you're calling to trade him, because other teams could have had him in free agency and not had to give anything up for him. So if you're trying to trade him, you're just doing like a sixth and seventh round swaps, which is nothing. And so it just doesn't make sense to me that you have any intention of trading this guy and any other team has any intention of actually acquiring this guy from you before he even takes a snap for your football team.
Yeah. I'm sitting here. I'm not the one that's saying
I
think that Steph Diggs could get traded.
I know.
Greg Bedard is saying that he thinks Steph Diggs could get traded, sounding like before the season starts.
Sure.
And that it would take a number one caliber receiver back. There's only one guy who seems like he's a holdout who has the potential to be a number one holdout and a wide receiver and isn't a holdout. All that to say, like, I still think that the distance between the Commanders and Terry McLaurin right now is more due in part to where they are in the season,
yeah,
where
the
they
cycle.
Are in the calendar,
yeah, 100%.
Which is everybody's on vacation, nobody's talking, nobody's on the phones. And so
once training camp starts, I bet they'll start talking again.
But if training camp starts and they don't have a contract working out, then it's like, okay, what would you give up for Terry McLaurin? Would you give up Steph Diggs, second rounder? I see the text line. Somebody says it's going to take way more than that to get Terry McLaurin.
Because if I'm...
Well, it's also going to take you paying twice, which was something the old guard would never do. You're going to have to extend him and pay him 30 mil, maybe plus a year.
But like, if I'm thinking of it, like the more and more I think about it, if I'm Washington, if I have to take on Steph Diggs in a trade with Terry McLaurin, like, I want even more draft picks. Like, it's because I think the trade straight
would you
up,
do it? How many draft picks would you give
so
up plus
in,
Steph
in
Diggs?
A trade straight up for Terry McLaurin, you're probably going to have to give up like a first and a pick swap is kind of where my head's at, is my thought. Then again, with the contract, maybe it's a second and a pick swap. I don't know, but it's somewhere in that range. So maybe it would have to be Steph Diggs, a second and like a fourth, and then a pick swap, maybe.
Do you do that?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, that's why I'm like,
yeah,
we need to
the
get
Patriots,
to the point.
But like, when, Washington can just continue to ask for
when,
more.
When does it become too rich for the Patriots?
Like a first and a third plus player. Like plus defense.
For a 30-year-old receiver.
Yeah, that you have to give a new contract to.
Yeah.
And that's when it becomes too much, I think. I look at it from the Patriots just desperately need a number one receiver. Like desperately bad need a number one receiver for their young rookie quarterback. Like horrendous. It's their biggest need that they still have not addressed for like 6 years. And I look at it and if the opportunity presents itself, they wouldn't even pull the trigger for DK Metcalf, which was a third round pick in a $30 million contract. So I just can't imagine that they do it also for Terry McLaurin. You know what I mean? Like that's the more I talk it out, the less and less likely I think it happens.
Yeah. I don't think the Commanders are dumb enough to do it. So no. I see the text line saying,
because they just keep asking for more.
Like if you think this is a realistic trade for Diggs, I'm just sitting here reading the report of Greg Bedard saying the Patriots aren't thrilled with Steph Diggs right now. There's a possibility he wouldn't be on the roster. They would trade and need to get back a number one caliber receiver. How are you doing that? How would that happen? So if you're asking me what I think is going to happen realistically today, I think that Steph Diggs is going to be your number one wide receiver as we head into the season. Maybe Kyle Williams will accelerate above that.
I hope
hopefully.
So.
Maybe he'll develop ahead of that. And then Diggs can be a complimentary piece. We'll see. All that like TBD. And I think that Washington and Terry McLaurin are going to reach terms at the start of training camp, and there won't be a significant holdout there, and it'll be all gravy. But if you're in a situation where both teams are unhappy with their guys, how rich would you go as the Patriots to bring Terry McLaurin here if you also feel like Steph Diggs is just not going to work in terms of chemistry here, especially with what Mike Vrabel's trying to build in his culture move?
Yeah, I would be willing to give up a lot of assets, but I was also willing to give up a ton of assets for DK Metcalf, and they wouldn't even give up a third round pick and $30 million for him. So like, I don't think it's realistic that they trade for Terry McLaurin. Unfortunately, like I want him. If I'm the GM, I would have done the DK Metcalf trade and then still traded for Terry McLaurin because I want high price wide receivers who are going to help my young rookie quarterback while he's still on a rookie contract. And you have the flexibility to do it with the money. Like that's how I would approach it. Clearly, the New England Patriots disagree because they're not even willing to give one of the best receivers in football $30 million and trade a third-round pick for him.
What if Drake May calls and says, I want this as my wedding gift, please?
No.
I would like Terry McLaurin as my wedding gift, please.
Yeah, there's no way Vrabel acquiesces to that. None. Absolutely zero. Like, it's just, I can't imagine a world that a team would be willing to give up more than a third round pick and $30 million for Terry McLaurin, but not a third round pick and $30 million for DK Metcalf. Because no offense, I know Terry McLaurin's your guy as a Washington fan, but DK Metcalf, better receiver than Terry McLaurin.
I think that's a fair argument to make.
Like DK Metcalf is freaking awesome. He is a different kind of specimen, and I think he's younger. I think DK Metcalf's only like 27,
that sounds
28.
Right.
Whereas Terry McLaurin's pushing 30. Yeah, 27 years old, DK Metcalf. Just turned 27 in December. Like, if they won't do it for DK Metcalf, I cannot in any world imagine they'd do it for Terry McLaurin.
Do you want to talk about the wide receiver room after trending?
Let's do it. 617-779-7937. Mego and Shime here talking Pats. But right now, Jacob's going to get you caught up with what's trending. Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Taking you up until 1 o'clock this afternoon. We got a fun name game to play coming up in the 12 o'clock hour. But right now, talking New England Patriots, who are just talking about the idea that could Steph Diggs actually get traded before he even takes a snap with the New England Patriots? Would you trade him for a guy like Terry McLaurin or if another number one receiver breaks free? Because, Mego, to be completely candid, this wide receiver room kind of stinks for the New England Patriots.
I'm sorry.
I'm being nice.
How many years are we going to have this discussion? Like, at least at this point last summer, we were coming off of the draft where Jalen Polk and Javon Baker were supposed to be the fleece that the Patriots got in the draft,
not
where
so
they got two for one, and instead of Ladd McConkey, they got these two receivers, and they were gonna like overhaul the whole room. And unfortunately, those guys did a whole lot of nothing.
And Ladd McConkey is one of the better young receivers in football. He was awesome last year. So it's just you've put yourself in a position now too, where Jalen Polk and Javon Baker might not even make the roster this year, which is insane to even think.
I think it's pretty safe. I mean, who knows? Maybe he'll have an absolutely incredible and transformative camp, but I think Javon Baker's gone.
I agree. I think Javon Baker is absolutely a roster casualty this year. I think, to me, we mentioned it in the last segment, Stephon Diggs, Matt Collins, Kyle Williams are all locks. I think Pop Douglas is a lock to make this roster as well. I don't think he is going anywhere quite yet. I think what he has been able to contribute so far and what he can't contribute going forward, I think, is enough to keep him around. And then it becomes just a free-for-all between Booty, Bourne, Polk, and Efton Chisholm to try and make this roster.
I think Efton Chisholm's going to make it.
I know. You love your guy, Efton.
I think he's going to be
Efton
a special,
Chisholm the third.
I think he's going to be a special teamer, but I think he'll get a little receiver play.
Yeah. Yeah.
To me, the biggest bubble name is Jalen Polk.
It has to be.
I just think it's going to be hard for them to reconcile while Elliot Wolf is still here, completely moving on from a second round pick, because that it shouldn't carry the weight so much of where these guys get drafted. I mean, look who Stephon Diggs has been for how late he was drafted. Everybody thinks of Julian Edelman being drafted in the seventh round. Everybody has stories of receivers who are taken super late and then explode into these incredibly productive receivers. But when you're 1 year out from taking a guy in the second round, like, you still look at who he was coming out of the draft and that everybody felt he was a second rounder. This isn't the kind of reach that Cole Strange was in the first round. He was widely agreed upon at that time coming out of Washington as being that guy.
Yeah, I loved the pick at the time. I'll be completely honest. I loved the Jalen Polk pick. I was like, oh, perfect. This is Jacoby Myers with a little bit more upside.
He was supposed to be an even more productive Jacoby Myers, a volume receiver who was also supposed to be this incredible guy for the locker room. He was this character guy, this high character leadership guy. And not only was he incredibly unproductive on the field, but some of the character stuff didn't look great just from the public perspective of him getting on the microphone and saying, I think I have the best hands in the NFL after all the drops that he had.
Yeah, this is one of those situations where, and this is just my personal belief, where it's like nature versus nurture. Like, you were just drafted into a really bad organization.
So dysfunctional.
There was a possibility that things could just go horribly wrong, and everything went wrong for him, which is why I'm even more confident in Drake May coming out the other side of this.
Oh my
because
God.
He showed...
How does this always turn into your Drake May confidence?
I'm just saying, just
yesterday
because
you said he was going to be Aaron Rodgers.
I said he could be. Look,
on the field, guys.
Yes, yeah, not off the field. And we're not talking about pyramids and stuff. But, like, I feel like, the way in which he had, I understand it was very limited, but there was a lot of things to like and things to, he showed success in a lot of different areas last year with such a dysfunctional organization around him. Whereas a guy like Jalen Polk, who I really liked and thought was really talented, came in and completely fell apart. Yes, it entirely infected him. And I think you see that happen in NFL teams constantly, where really talented guys come out of college programs and find themselves in horribly dysfunctional situations and end up being really bad.
I honestly, in making my list of who I thought would be in the wide receiver room once the season starts and what their production level is going to be, totally forgot Matt Collins. The amount of times that I've forgotten Matt Collins' existence on this team.
I love Matt Collins.
I do too. But it's like we've seen him at OTAs. We saw him at minicamp. He's been on the bike at times. But I forget he's on the roster.
Yeah.
I forget he's on the roster. Maybe he'll be a nice red zone weapon. But I because he hasn't been able to participate in any real way, I'm like, yeah, okay, we got Kyle Williams, we got Pop Douglas, is Kayshon Booty going to be on the team? Is Kendrick Bourne going to be on the team? Then I'm like, oh, crap, you got to fit Mac Hollins in here somewhere, because he's got over $3 million guaranteed from the Patriots, so I think he's going to be on the team.
And I think that's the only hope for, like, Polk, Booty, Bourne. Those guys need to just pray that, like, Stephon Diggs and Matt Collins may, like, start the season on PUP or something.
Yeah.
And then they sneak onto the roster, and if they can prove anything in the first couple weeks of the season, they might be able to keep themselves around. But, like, that's the only way at this point, right? If Matt Collins is healthy at all for the start of the season, that's a roster spot that they lose out on. If Steph Diggs shows that he doesn't need to start the season on PUP and he's good to go for week one, week two, that's another roster spot that they lose out on. And it just continues to whittle down the amount of open space. And for me, it just because it's Josh McDaniels, I feel like Kendrick Bourne's the one that might make the roster. I think Booty might be the better player, just like more potential-wise. Like, he showed a little bit last year. He wasn't bad at times, and he seemed like he had a decent enough connection with Drake May. But just because of Josh McDaniels and knowing the system, I think Kendrick Bourne might be the one that actually sneaks in on the roster. And so then you're looking at Matt Collins, Steph Diggs, Pop Douglas, Kyle Williams, Kendrick Bourne, Efton Chisholm are your six.
Yeah.
And that's because Chisholm is a special teamer more than he is a receiver.
I really feel like it's a coin flip between Kendrick Bourne and Kayshon Booty, because I do think that Josh McDaniels has a great affinity for Kendrick Bourne, and there's a lot of question marks about Kayshon Booty. Like, does he get it? Does he still, like, is he going to live up to his potential? Because there's a lot of evidence that he doesn't completely get it from a pro level. I think it's a coin flip for those two.
Yeah.
Like, you could, on any given day, I feel like in training camp, watching, we're going to be like, it's a Booty day.
Yep.
Or a Bourne day.
Yeah. 100%.
And it'll be very interesting to watch that. But I largely agree with your list. So I wanted to ask you,
okay,
we're assuming, despite some musing from Boston Sports Journal's Greg Bedard, that Steph Diggs may not be on the roster by the time the season starts.
Yep.
When you look at the room, what would represent a successful amount of progress for these receivers, or in Steph Diggs' case, return? And we're talking about receiving yards, maybe some of the stuff that is not as measurable, and touchdowns.
You mean like as a whole or individually, or?
Individually. Yeah, individually. So I'll give you an example. Like,
okay,
I think the guy who has to take the most enormous step forward is Pop Douglas.
I agree. Yes.
Where I was so frustrated by the way that he played last year, because he was such a spark in that yucky year before. Like, the way that he was able to explode in the slot, and at times last year, he still looked like the best receiver on the team, and he's a little guy who can only, I mean, I think he can sometimes be a volume, a vertical threat,
mm-hmm,
but he's limited because of his size.
Yeah.
And to only have 621 receiving yards and 3 touchdowns last year, it was a total mess everywhere.
Yeah.
But he was part of the mess at times. At times he was, I can't remember the exact game it was, when he was on a completely different page than Drake May, where he was running a totally different route.
Yep.
And Drake threw it, and it was an interception. And after the game, May covered for him.
Yeah.
He was like,
but I think even one of the coaches even mentioned how Booty wasn't in the right spot. Was it Van Pelt?
Pop, you mean?
Yes, how Pop wasn't in the
Pop
right spot.
Pop wasn't in the right spot.
Correct. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think Alex Van Pelt kind of gave it up.
Alluded
there
to that at the very least. Yeah. And so, look, I would expect a much bigger step forward for Pop Douglas. Look, if Stephon Diggs is healthy for 16 of the 17 games, like, Stephon Diggs needs to have over 1,000 yards. Has to. Like, I don't think that's a question in my mind. If you're healthy for 16 games or even 15 games, like, I think you need to get close to that 1,000 yards.
Really?
Yeah.
I had 850.
850? I don't think
for Steph Diggs.
Because
I don't know that he's going to get all the targets when you're, if other guys are going to have successful seasons as well. I don't know if Steph Diggs is getting that volume of targets.
Yeah, and so I guess if you're looking at successful seasons, like, for me, Matt Collins, I only need like 500 yards from him. I don't need that.
Only 500? What did he have last year with the Bills?
Like, I want to say it was in the 600 range.
He's a red zone guy, but I don't know that he's getting that volume of yards.
Oh, never mind. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
He only had like 378. Okay.
I was going to say,
let me tone that number
Sean,
down.
That was with Josh Allen.
Let's go down to like 400. I think 400 would be good.
You
like
think he's going to be better with this Patriots team?
His career high was 690. I think you signed him to be better, like, be a part of this team, at least, especially for the first half of the season. I think he needs to be more of an impact player. If he's healthy at the start of the season, mm-hmm, he needs to be more of an impact player early.
He needs to wear his shoes around, because I think he's dealing with a foot injury now.
The best
way.
I don't think those two
things are disconnected.
The best way for his feet to heal are to get the energy from the earth, Mego. Come on.
See, that's Aaron Rodgers-y.
No, that's more Tristan Casas-y, but yeah, fair
enough.
Whatever. Yeah, feet prisons. Keep him out of the shoes. It's fine, Mac. But like, I think early on, he needs to kind of carry some of that weight while a young guy like Kyle Williams acclimates to the NFL. I think Kyle Williams will start the season slowly, I think his second half of the season is what he really needs to kind of explode into, because I think that's when generally it's normally around the bye that young receivers, first-year receivers in particular, tend to kind of explode onto the scene. The Patriots' bye is a little late in the year this year. It's week 14.
Yet again.
Insane. But, like, I'm hoping that maybe, like, that Atlanta game in week 9, maybe that Tampa Bay game in week 10 is really where Kyle Williams starts to kind of break out onto the scene. And if you can get 400-500 yards from Kyle Williams this year, I think, especially back half loaded in the season, I think that's a really, really good start to his career. If you can get anything more than that, I think that's tremendous.
Yeah, I said 500 yards for Kyle Williams.
Yeah.
I said 500 yards feels tenable for him, especially maybe just coming off of the Javon Baker and Jalen Polk experience from last year. I just don't, I have very low standards for what feels like a successful rookie wide receiver season on the Patriots.
Yeah, I just see if Drake May is taking a big step forward, I think the receiving group needs to take that equal step forward. Like, it is to, I argue with Curtis about the Drake May numbers plenty, but to his credit, like,
your Mac Jones, Drake May year two numbers.
Sure, yeah, whatever, however you want to phrase it. To his credit, he is right in that the quarterback needs to elevate the players around him. And so if I expect Drake May to take a massive step forward, I expect the receivers just to be better by proxy, right? By being around Drake May, he's being better. Therefore, they are also better. You also have to throw in Hunter Henry is technically a receiving right. target as well in this. Like, he is going to have 500
but
yards. That's like almost a lock.
Judging by who he was in Josh McDaniels' system in the past,
yep.
I think he's going to be much more like short yardage red zone kind of situational stuff.
Yeah, even in a crappy year last year, he had his career high in single season yardage at 674 yards.
He led receptions in or receiving yards for the entire team.
Yeah, he almost had 100 targets on the season. So, like, that's another guy that you have to account at least 600 yards for. I mean, in the 2021 season with Josh McDaniels, he had 600 yards and 9 touchdowns. I think that's probably what you get more of in 25 than last year, right? Last year, you got that 674-yard number. That number will come down, but the touchdowns number will also go up. You'll see more of kind of a balance there between the two.
So the biggest, most important number to me in this receiving room is Efton Chisholm's 1,200 yards. I'm just kidding. I think Pop Douglas needs to have an 800-yard season. I think he needs to be well above where he was last year. And a lot of that is not, I think he can do it. That might sound a little crazy, but when you look at the Josh McDaniels system, unless you think Diggs is going to be playing slot a lot of this is going to come down to what Pablo Torre tells us, Pop Douglas can do in the system and what he can be for Drake May. And I think those two should have enough chemistry if Pop is able to master the McDaniels playbook, I think it should be a match made in heaven for those three. 800 receiving yards. I'm not as focused in on the touchdowns because, again, I think guys like Hunter Henry and Mac Hollins are going to be bigger red zone targets. Maybe even someone, especially, as you said, in the second half of the season, Kyle Williams, somebody who loves to go up for a contested catch in a good way, not like in a Nikhil Harry or who was the big stiff who was here. Devontae Parker.
Yeah, the 80-20 guy.
Yeah. Not in a big stiff way, just in a way that you'll appreciate. I think Pop Douglas 800 receiving yards this year.
So I'm not quite as big of a number. I'm only at like 700, which I know is just only a slight improvement over last year's yardage number. I just think it's going to be more impactful numbers.
He wasn't good last year.
No, but I also think that there are other options around him now, whereas he was like the best option last year. He should have been way better last year, but this year there are better options on the football field than Pop Douglas a lot of the time. Stephon Diggs, 9 times out of 10, is going to be a better option than Pop Douglas, which is why I expect more yardage out of Stephon Diggs than you do, but you're expecting more out of Pop Douglas, and that's okay. I just went through and just quick maths for you. Stephon Diggs to have 1,000, Pop Douglas to have 700, Mac Hollins to have 400, Hooper to add 400, Hunter Henry to have 600, and then Kyle Williams to have another 500 gets me to 3,600 total passing yards right there for my guy Drake May. You're going to sprinkle in random targets to other guys, whether it's Efton Chisholm or more yardage or less yardage
Kendrick
for a couple of these guys in here.
Booty.
Yep. So mix those guys in. Like, I think that's exactly where you want to be, right? Those are your primary target getters. Raiders heading into 2025. They're going to account for 3,600 of at least 3,800 total yards.
Don't forget Ramondre Stevenson.
Yeah, exactly. And Travion Henderson. Henderson's going to be explosive with the ball in his hand. So those screen passes, swing passes to him, I think are going to play a major role as well.
All right, should we take a quick break?
Yep. 617-779-7937. It's Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Taking you up until 1 o'clock this afternoon when Rob Bradford and the Baseball is a Foreign program takes over. Getting you ready for Red Sox pregame, the MassMutual Red Sox pregame show right here on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. First pitch today is at 4:05 down in the nation's capital. Let's go to Rick in New Hampshire, wants to talk about Drake May. Go ahead, Rick.
Hi, thank you. Good morning, you twos.
Morning.
I hope everybody's enjoying that beautiful weekend, beautiful holiday weekend. I hope all the listeners are enjoying the weather. I would like to ask you, too, because it's kind of no one talks about it. How many yards rushing can we pencil in for Drake May? I'm saying 500 easy.
Okay.
Rushing.
All right, Rick. Rick says 500 rushing yards for Drake May. Is that around where you would expect him to be, Mego, or do you expect more or less? Where are you at?
I feel like that's kind of a safe place.
I agree.
What do you think? Do you think it's too high in a Josh McDaniels system?
No, absolutely not. I don't think it's too high. I mean, last year, just from scrambling, we were pissed because there were no designed runs whatsoever. And last year, he had 421 yards on 54 attempts. He was averaging like 8 yards a carry, which is insane, by the way. And that was only through 12 games. And it wasn't even 12 full games because he got hurt in one. And he really started that one against the Bills and then immediately came out. So realistically, he had 421 yards in about 10 games, which is extremely impressive. And to think that he would play a full 17-game season, my number, it has to be 500 yards. Like, that seems like the appropriate number. I think the rushing, like, especially the designed runs, will happen primarily around the red zone, in my opinion, because I think that's where they're most effective. But the Drake May scrambling thing is still going to happen. Like, even in a Josh McDaniels offense, Drake May's ability, one of the things that makes him so great is his ability to escape the pocket and make something happen, whether it's with his arm or with his legs. And so I think you're still going to see him scramble a bit.
I will say, though, last year, so much of his scrambling was born out of necessity.
Sure,
because
true.
Of the mess that the wide receiver room was.
Definitely.
And that he could really only target Pop Douglas or Hunter Henry for the most part. And if you look at who we compare him to so often in Josh Allen, so Josh Allen had 631 rushing yards his rookie season, and that dropped down to 510 his sophomore season, and all the way down to 421 in 2020 when he really started to take off as a more elite quarterback.
Yep.
So I don't know. 500 almost feels like close to the ceiling for me for what I think he will do, because I think he'll have those design runs, but to your point, they're going to be more in the red zone or in a tricky, like, third down, gotta have it scenario. And so I don't think that's going to lead to a ton of yardage. And I also think with Josh McDaniels, there is going to be more of the quick screen, you know, the quick game. And even if the rushing and the scrambling and the improvising is part of that for Drake May, which I think it will be, I just don't think it's going to be to the extent that we saw it last year, where so much of the cheat code that I was a little worried about, honestly, going into the season with Drake May, is that he's always been the big athletic kid that can take off in backyard football and beat everybody that way. But I think Josh McDaniels is going to put the onus and the pressure on him to develop the other parts of himself as a quarterback. And so the way that you see Josh Allen's rushing numbers drop in those early seasons as he's developing, I think we'll see that with Drake as well.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the attempts per game may go down a little bit, but just because of the length of the season compared to only playing the basically 10 full games he played last year, I think that's kind of where the number goes up a little bit, even though it may be on a less yardage per game type scenario. I also just look back at the one time Josh McDaniels had a rushing quarterback, and that was Cam Newton back in 2020, pre-Mac Jones. Cam Newton was basically washed at this point, right?
He was he was running because he couldn't throw anymore.
He was not MVP Cam Newton any longer. But Cam Newton still had 600 yards that year in 15 games. So,
but Chimey couldn't do anything
else.
Yeah,
but he's also not the same kind of explosive runner Drake May is, right? He was a power runner. A lot of those were like dives and power runs right into the line of scrimmage and in short yardage situations. Whereas Drake May, when Drake May takes off, like it is a burst of speed. It's much more Lamar Jackson than it is Cam Newton. And I'm not comparing him to Lamar Jackson, but
Well, you just did.
No, just in the way in which the explosion happens. So it's much more of a yards per carry kind of form than it is that power run, short yardage, the Jalen Hurts type runs, right? It's much more explosive than that. And so I understand that in terms of carries per game, that number, I agree, is going to come down. Per game, on a per game basis, that number is going to come down. I think just the longevity of the season is going to create the total yardage number to go up.
Text line says if May is anywhere around 500 yards, it's bad for the Patriots. You want him in the pocket and passing. I wouldn't go that far.
I disagree.
I wouldn't say you want to keep him in the pocket and passing. I'm saying
you can do both.
You need to have more balance than you had last year. Because again, last year, it was born out of necessity. It was the only real like option that you had in that offense a lot of times.
Yeah.
And so hopefully your offense is much more functional and is much more layered and has a lot more variety to it and a lot more structure. And so you don't need to have Drake May scrambling, running for his life and trying to put the team on his back that way. He gets the room and the comfort and the space to develop the other sides of himself so that he's continuing on the trajectory that you want a young quarterback to. He's not just taking off and hoping he knows how to slide to protect his head every game.
I think one of the other things, too, when it comes to Drake's running is, to Josh McDaniels' credit, I may not be the biggest Josh McDaniels fan, but one of the things he does really well, Hart and I have talked about this in the past, is he scripts his plays.
Well, watch out, because Andy Hart is number one in the Josh McDaniels fan club.
I know, but to Josh's credit, he scripts his plays in a way that allows him to set something up for later. And so if Josh wants to, if he sees an opportunity.
Foreshadowing.
No, it's not even that. It's he's going to lull you asleep in thinking he's never going to have Drake run. And then when you least expect it, when the opportunity presents himself, Drake's going to play action read and he's going to take the ball and run for 30 yards. And it's just going to be kind of one of those, wow, we never saw that coming play. And it's just about the timing of that. And I think that's kind of where Drake's going to benefit from Josh McDaniels is, yes, you're right. 9 times out of 10, it's going to be those swing passes, the screen passes, the quick passes, the, you know, play action pass. But then that one time when the defense isn't ready for it, they're going to hit him with a QB run and he's going to get big chunk yardage out of it. Because like, I don't want it. This is not, I'm not trying to do this, but it just happened. Like, you can be both. You can be a great passer and a great runner. Lamar Jackson is a great example of that. It's not, I'm not saying.
Every day you pick another MVP caliber quarterback to put Drake up against. No, yesterday was Aaron Rodgers.
This one wasn't my fault.
Yesterday was Aaron Rodgers. Today it's Lamar Jackson. I'm just curious who it's going to be
this
when
one
you're
wasn't
on
my
the morning
fault,
show
but like,
next week.
Ken yelled at me earlier in the week for second year quarterbacks. Like in Lamar Jackson's second year, he threw 36 touchdown passes. Mm-hmm. Great passer, but then also ran for 1,200 yards. I'm not saying Drake May is going to run for 1,200 yards. I would be thrilled with half that number of rushing yards. And then he's going to be an even better passer because I think he's just a better passer than Lamar Jackson was in his second season in the NFL. So like I just, when I look at it, I'm like, you can do both. You can throw and run. And I think the importance is just finding the balance between the two.
I can't wait until we get to training camp and Drake May is now Patrick Mahomes. Like, we're getting
He's
there.
Not Patrick
we're
Mahomes.
We're going there. That's
Stop.
The
I would
names
never,
that you're dropping
I would never
in comparison
say so
to Drake
ludicrous.
May, that is where we're trending.
Nah,
that's
we're
where
trending.
We're trending.
No. I would never do that. I would never put that kind of pressure on my guy.
I have an excellent test that I want to pose to you.
Okay.
Our name game. But I think we may have to delay it because I think Boss Man is coming in and wants
we
to talk
a
little bit about the road show.
Yep.
So we're going to do that in the next hour. But I promise we will get to the name game.
Yes, the name game's coming up. We'll get to that closer to 12:30. Boss Man Ken Laird in the building wants to pop in. Has a, he says, mild sports take. I bet it's hotter than mild. Let's give Ken some credit. He also wants to talk about the Greg Hill Road Shows. We'll do that next here on Mego and Shime on Boston Sports Original WEEI.